This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Welcome on into our Friday, February 21st edition of Sports Talk. Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, bringing you till 7 o'clock tonight. That's when we got the Pelicans taking on the Dallas Mavericks, a 7:30 tip-off in Big D. Got a lot to get to on our show today. The news came out finally. The defensive coordinator role has been filled officially. We'd been speculating that Brandon Staley was the favorite to get the gig, and in fact, he did, and pretty soon we'll be connecting with Lorenzo Neal, Chargers legendary fullback, also host of the Believe in Chargers podcast. Help us break things down with Brandon Staley. Also, get a little more insights on Kellen Moore. 4:35, we'll be talking with Michael Giannetti, co-founder and editor of Sport Track. Get a little insight on the Saints salary cap situation. We know it is a big old puzzle that the Black and Gold need to figure out as they try and get under the cap before the new league year starts. 5:25, getting a little bit of an NFL Combine primer since that's kicking off next week. Eric Edholm, the lead draft writer for NFL Media, will be joining us. And then in the 6 o'clock hour, one of our favorites, Odyssey Sports NBA insider Nick Friedell, giving us the lowdown on the Pelicans and the rest of the NBA with just the final stretch of the regular season upon us. Just 27 games left for the Pelicans. It's really not the halfway point.
No. The All-Star game in the NBA comes super late. It's weird. And it's kind of this like sprint to the finish. I think the Pelicans, I don't know, what is a positive finish for the Pelicans for you? It's weird because it's like, I want them to get the number one pick in the draft.
I'm with you, right.
So I've now shifted over from I want entertaining basketball to like, yeah, we can lose these games.
I still want to be entertained, but just fall apart in the last 4 minutes.
Yeah, but that's not entertaining. I don't know. Like, I want Cooper Flagg. Like, the best way for this season to go would be next season you have Cooper Flagg in your lineup, right? Like, that's it. That's all you have left. And like, them winning 10 games over the rest of the final, 27, would be the worst-case scenario. So it's just, I don't know. This is why you never want to be in these situations, because you end up –
right,
like, I want to talk about, like, oh, how can this team improve? But then it's like, I don't want them to improve that much.
Right, because each victory takes away that percentage of ping-pong balls you have in the lottery.
And that's not fun. That's not where you want to be.
Well, but it's been that kind of season for the Pels, though. You know it.
It's been that kind of life as a Pelicans fan. It seems like every few years, it's like, it seemed like it was going so well. And then, you know, I go back, like, what do things look like if DeMarcus Cousins doesn't blow up his Achilles on, like, a hustle play?
Right.
Like, if you remember that moment, the Pelicans were, like, on fire. They had just beaten the Rockets, or they're in the process of beating the Rockets, a team that was going to be the one seed, I believe, in the West that year. You know, they had Chris Paul and James Harden. You had this kind of Twin Towers thing going with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. You went all in for Cousins, and it was working. He was hustling to get a loose ball after a missed free throw, and then he blows. And then it's like, you know, that changed everything. And I don't know. It just never – I don't feel like they've ever gotten back to that point where it's like I felt like, okay, we got stars, we got a plan. I don't know. It's sad.
That kind of buzz around them.
Yeah, like I was excited about that team, and now I'm not. So we'll see. But yeah, maybe they can get healthy. They can do something. But I'm not. It's not a point where I'm thrilled to watch the games at this stage.
Well, hopefully we're thrilled in watching the Saints next season with a new head coach, also a new defensive coordinator. We both have charged ties to the Chargers, and we're now welcoming in a former Chargers fullback and also NFL legend, host of the Believe in Chargers podcast as well, Lorenzo Neal. Definitely appreciate the time. How the heck are you doing, Lorenzo?
Legendary, guys, legendary. I got to ask you guys a question. I'm interviewing you guys. I don't watch a lot of this sport, but the first time last night, I think I watched the whole hockey game. How about that game last night? Canada and the U.S., how about that? They were going after, right?
We were loving it until what happened in overtime.
Yeah, my main suggestion would be if you have the best player on the planet on the other team, someone should be near him in overtime. I don't know. That's my idea. I don't know a ton about hockey.
Think? Hey, you know what? You're hired. Hey, you're hired. Especially in overtime, it just seemed like the United States had the momentum. They were getting shots at the goal, and they just couldn't get out. I was like, oh, God. So, but anyways, yeah, anywho, yeah, I love what you guys are doing there and then down there and all. And y'all don't realize that was the first place I got drafted, 84th pick overall, 87th pick overall, to the New Orleans Saints. And that's where I played 4 years of my young career with Dalton Hilliard and Sam Mills, Ricky Jackson, the Dome Patrol. So, Jim Moore. So it all started for me in big Louisiana.
We also get to work with the legendary Bobby Hebert, and he talks a lot about those days for sure.
Oh, yeah. Bobby's amazing, man. I love Bobby. Bobby's got that voice, right, guys? It keeps you going.
Looking at the hire just recently, we'll get into with the defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley. Just wondering what you can tell us about his time with the Chargers. Obviously, things didn't end the way that he wanted to over there. But just what kind of defense maybe we can expect him to bring to this Saints squad?
Well, I think you got to be smart to play in this defense. I mean, Brandon Staley, you saw what he did with the Rams. They were able to win a Super Bowl. We know that he can coach X's and O's, and he's a guy I think is a great defensive coordinator. Some people question maybe is he a fit for a head coach? And I think that's why when you look at what the Saints have done, when you go out and you hire, you know, Kellen Moore, where was he come from? Think about it. San Diego. The Chargers, the L.A. Chargers. Excuse me. But that's where he was with coach. So you have two guys that have some familiarity, and you brought in a head coach that was the head coach that you worked with. You brought him in why? You brought him in that he can also teach you how to be a head coach in Kellen Moore. So that is going to be a great confidant for Coach Kellen Moore that you guys hired as the head coach. I think that you're going to have a great working relationship with him and Staley.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Staley as a defensive coach? Because, you know, I think people talk about Brandon, you know, it's all going to go back to, oh, well, the head coaching tenure didn't go that well. And, you know, we saw with Dennis Allen, he was a great defensive coordinator. He got the head coaching job. It didn't go particularly well. But, you know, not every great defensive coach is meant to be a head coach. It's just the skill sets are very different. And
no question.
I think a lot of people look at it and be like, well, he failed as a coach. I'm like, well, actually, in 2020, he had the Rams. He installed a defense over Zoom. They couldn't even meet. And he had that team as the number one defense in the NFL. So there's a lot of actual success that you can point to on the defensive side of the ball. So what are your thoughts on his, you know, what the type of scheme he runs, the type of defense he puts on the field?
Yeah, I think that you guys know that offense entertains, but defense wins championships, and he's going to be a 4-3 guy. He's got to go four down. You've seen what he was able to do. He did a great job with the Rams. You said when you have players, look, if all things being equal, players are going to make plays, but coaches make decisions to help determine outcome of the game. You got to have some players to execute. You show me a great coach, I'll tell you what, he's got some great players. All I think about, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Brady. When you got a great coach, yeah, coaches get a lot of praise, but when you have great players around, it makes it happen. And Staley is a good coach. I think that he's one of those coaches. He knows X and O's, and have a defense that's going to be a solid defense. if you can get him the right guys to execute his plan. Look no further than a lot of – look at Spinola. Look at Spags over there in Kansas City. Not a great head coach, but look what Spags has done as a defensive coordinator for Kansas City Chiefs. Look at Vic Fangio. Hey, this guy, they motorboated the Kansas City Chiefs. He wasn't a great head coach. I knew Vic. Vic spent days in New Orleans. Knew him at the Niners as a defensive coordinator. Look how well. Took the Niners to a Super Bowl. Lost to the Harbaugh Bowl. So you got to look at certain guys. They're great defensive coordinators, but they're just not great head coaches. Look at North Turner. The list goes on, guys, that there's a lot of guys out there, and I think you got a good one in Staley, who is a great defensive, a really good defensive coordinator, and just the question's still out about being a head coach.
Yeah, you mentioned with the, you know, not everybody is a great head coach. We're kind of expecting that to happen with Dennis Allen moving on to Chicago, probably ignite that Bears defense over there after spending time here. Looking at the youth now movement with this coaching staff with the Saints, what were your impressions with that one season that Kellen Moore did spend with the Chargers?
Yeah, I thought that you saw that he absolutely, Justin Herbert loved Kellen Moore. I mean, this guy comes from Boise. He was a Boise player and watched him play in college. And he's just one of those guys that he knows X's and O's, a great offensive coordinator, a great offensive mind. He had a great year with Justin Herbert. He is going to come in there and he is going to help Carr. He's going to help whoever is at the quarterback position. Hopefully it's Derek Carr, Fresno State legend as well. So I hope it's him, but Kellen Moore is going to make sure the quarterback is going to be successful. He's going to get the ball out of his hands, going to have the quarterback knowing where to go with the ball. You guys got a fine offensive coordinator. The verdict is still out, but can he be a head coach? But you know what? You got to start somewhere. There's a lot of guys that just first-time head coaches that can do pretty well. So I think Kellen Moore, great offensive mind. You're going to see, saw what he did. Wherever he goes, he has success, especially with the offensive side of the ball. But now you're having a head coach, but also now offensive coordinator. So just going to depend what he does. Is he going to be willing to give up the rings to another offensive coordinator? Because now he's a head coach. And I think that's one of those reasons also that he brought in Coach Staley to help him micromanage and understand what it takes to be a head coach.
You know, Lorenzo, you just brought it up. I was going to ask you, you know, as a Fresno State guy, there's like some Fresno State connections here, right? You know, even Jordan Mims, a running back for Fresno State, obviously Derek Carr.
Yeah,
Doug Nussmeier,
yes.
People might not know, Doug Nussmeier actually spent a year as an offensive coordinator for Fresno State. So there's a lot of Bulldog pride in New Orleans these days. And so I'm curious, you know, obviously I'm sure you've followed Derek Carr for a long time. You know, what are your thoughts on him as a starting quarterback and what he's done and where he is at this point? Because that's going to be a big question for the Saints. It's a big cap hit. You're changing coaching regimes. Do you try to move on at the quarterback position? Do you stick with him? What are your thoughts on Derek?
Well, I think right now, if you're going to get someone in the draft, is he going to be ready? That's the question, and that's what's tough. Because if you get someone say, okay, we're going to go all in and get a rookie, is he going to be ready for that first year? You need a Derek Carr because he's a guy that's not necessary. There's different type of quarterbacks, Mahomes. You look at Josh Allen. You look at, you know, when you think about Cincinnati's, the Bengals, you watch Joe Burrow, Joe Cool. Look around the league. There are certain type of guys that are game changers, and then there's game managers. There are certain types of guys. There's a difference between a thermostat and a thermometer. See, a thermometer, all it does is just measure temperature. Thermostat, it regulates temperature. I don't know if Derek Carr is that type of player. I know he's a good player. He's not a great quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback, but he can win games, but everything needs to be good around him. So that's the thing. If you're looking for a guy, if that's the thing you're looking for with Carr, then you don't have that in Derek Carr. Now you have a guy that can win us. I'm not saying he can go out and carry a team, but he's not that type of quarterback, but he can win it. He's good enough to win a Super Bowl if everything around him is good.
Yeah, you know, I had someone say this to me once, and I think it lands in this situation, which is like, no one gets excited about the 15th best quarterback in the NFL until you don't have a top 15 quarterback, and then that's the only thing you need, and suddenly you don't have it, right?
Right. You know what? You hit the nail right on the head. What do you want, Geno Smith? I mean, what are you going to upgrade? You know, and no due disrespect, but there's just a lot of guys out there. They're just guys. You have a guy at the top, like you said, top 15 quarterback. He's not the top, the elitist of the elitist, but he can win. But if you go out there now and just say, hey, we're going to get rid of him, you're going to take some growing pains either or, and no matter what. So do you go draft a guy and say, look, a year or two, or do you say, look, we're going to rebuild and start all over all the time?
Lorenzo, I want to ask you about the fullback position. It seems like you guys are a dying breed lately in the NFL. What's going on with the you know, overall, and do you think there's still a place in this league? I think we've seen it. You know, we need you big guys helping pave the way out there, and it just seems like a position that's really been a sought after, like not even thought about anymore.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But I think when you look at Cal Juszczyk and look at some of the guys that played the position, it's not that it's not a glamorous position. You understand that. And to play fullback, you got to be different. And I think that's the biggest thing. When you're a fullback, you got to be able to move people. And that's what I did. When I went out there and you saw certain guys, you watched the, you know, not just myself, but you look at guys like Sam Gash and Great the Moose and Moose Johnson, you know, Larry Sinners. You watch guys that got downhill, was four, you know, you guys had one, T. Smith that played there a while back. You got to have guys that want to go in there and move guys out of the way. And I think it's going to start to come back because you saw this year two running backs put the running back position back on the map, and which was long overdue. So I hopefully, with that being said, the fullback position starts to come back this way, because I'm telling you, man, back in the day when I played, you guys knew. I mean, Larry Sinners, you think about Tony Richardson, Camden City, you know, all these great fullbacks that you had, Mike Allstott. We need the fullbacks. We need to make fullbacks great again. Juszczyk is still carrying the torch so for us, guys. Cal Juszczyk's going to carry that torch.
Awesome stuff, Lo. Definitely appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and hopefully be seeing you down here soon enough in New Orleans.
Absolutely. We'll do it again soon, guys. Cheers.
Thanks, man.
Lorenzo Neal, former Saints Chargers fullback and amongst other teams as well, also does the Host in Believe in Chargers podcast. Got a little inside info on Brandon Staley and Kellen Moore. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. Come back with more right after this, so stay tuned on WWL. I want to remind you folks, if you love fishing or hunting, you can't miss The Outdoors Guy. Don Dubuque, early Saturday mornings here on WWL. Don's the outdoors guy who spends decades fishing and hunting the woods, swamps, marshes, and bayous of the southeast Louisiana. Just catch Louisiana's Great Outdoors with Don Dubuque tomorrow and every Saturday morning, 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. on WWL. We're going to take a break, come back with more sports talk, get into a little bit of salary cap talk after this, so stay tuned on WWL.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Back here on Sports Talk, happy to welcome in now Michael Jannetty, co-founder and editor at SpotRack. Michael, how you been doing? I know it's been a crazy time of year right now as we get ready going into the NFL Combine.
Yeah, doing well. It's certainly starting to ramp up here with some late Friday transactions, but we love it. We're eating it up.
Looking at the Saints situation, I don't know if it's as confusing and hard for you to dissect as it is for us. You look at it, and it's been a bit of a mishmash for these last couple of seasons with this bunch. And it just, you know, every single season they're doing something to try and get back over the cap. Right now with the new projected salary cap for next season, where do the Saints sit right now?
Yeah, the best guess is around minus 48, minus 47. We'll see where that final number lands, but that's probably a pretty close to accurate estimate as to where things stand right now, which isn't great because, as you sort of alluded to, this is one of those years where you can't just kind of plug and play and move some things around and make it all work. They're at a point now where so many of these contracts are at a stuck moment that you can't just even start releasing players and free up the space that you need. So there's going to be some pain, I think some real maybe eye raisers here over the next couple of weeks to see what happens, and that's certainly starting at the quarterback position all the way down.
Yeah, Michael, before we go on, you know, the projections for the salary cap are always interesting to me because it's very much a projection until we find out the real number, but it's based on something, and sometimes it comes in higher, sometimes it comes in lower. You don't really see it coming lower that often, but what can you just explain where those projections come from? Like, what are the data points you're looking at when you're trying to figure out what the cap is going to be next year? How much is it going to go up? Because that obviously changes a lot in terms of what because teams have to plan for their cap next year, and they have to try to figure out what it is the same way everyone else does.
Yeah, exactly, right? So we obviously track year to year, and we've got the percent changes and things like that. That's sort of what we base it on, right? That there was a while there before the COVID years where there were a lot of adjustments that it was a pretty natural 7 to 7.5% increase. So we could pretty much get within 1 to 2 million early on in the off season, and then things would finalize as we got about this time every year. And then of late, right, the last 3 to 4 years, especially since the COVID stuff has been paid back and all of that's gone away to some degree, things have really exploded. And that's gambling. That's huge revenue streaming, right? Thursday Night Football, all the things that have been added in, Christmas football, all these added revenues have really just forced the hand to the point of where now, if it used to be 7%, it's looking like 9.5 to 10% might be the new normal, which means, you know, if we're going 280 million this year, we're going to be at or above 300 million next year, which is pretty wild when you know where we started from.
Derek Carr is obviously the big talk around here. There's Saints' situation with him, and you know, there's the possibility of restructuring him, but that's going to end up adding more years, and I don't think the team wants to do that. The talk is about possibly releasing him post June 1st to save on some money there, or you know, trying to find a trade partner with another team to deal him away as well. But can you lay out the Saints situation, the cap situation with quarterback Derek Carr for us?
It's a tough one because obviously all those options are somewhat on the table. You know, I think he's a slight trade candidate based on what he was able to do over the past couple of seasons here and where he might be headed. But even that isn't great, right? Because of the guarantee that sits here and what might have to happen. So as of right now, there's $10 million guaranteed for the upcoming season. That significantly changes on March 14th when another $30 million of that locks in. So time is of the essence. There's a hard deadline as to what's going to happen here. The post-June 1st makes sense. The problem with that is you got to carry this cap number until June 1st, and then you can certainly cut bait and split this dead cap up over the next couple of seasons. But that's the biggest problem with this is it doesn't alleviate the problem right now unless you can sit down with him and restructure this contract for the purposes of releasing him to make sure that, you know, both sides have a bit of an out here. But I know that they've approached him before about pay cuts and things like that, and it hasn't gone well. So I'm not sure there's a relationship in place to help them out in this regard. They may have to, at some point in time here, find somebody who's interested from a trade perspective and do whatever it takes to make that happen. Because that is, from a cap and obviously from a roster perspective, the best approach is to get him out before June 1st and free up around $11, $12 million, even if it means they have to eat some of that guaranteed money for the 2025 season.
Yeah, the only issue is, you know, we saw this play out with the Raiders. He has a no-trade clause, so he could be like, eh, not happening. But, you know, I am curious. I want your perspective on, you know, obviously the Saints are kind of the poster child for how they manage the cap in terms of, you know, converting base salary into bonus structures and pushing it out over however many years and blah, blah, blah. You know, they're not the only team that does it. It just seems like in a lot of cases, you know, when it's the Eagles that are doing it, I see terms like financial alchemy. I think we may have lost. I think we may have
He dropped
lost
out. Charlie's going to try and get him back. So, yeah, hold your question. You don't have All to right. keep going into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can kind of say it. But, like, yeah, it's interesting because when we talk about the salary cap, it's like if when a team does what the Saints do and it goes well,
It's brilliant.
We use different words.
Yeah.
Right? We use... I saw a term we used called... Is he back?
He is back.
All right. Michael, did you get any of my question before? Should I start over?
Start it over. Sorry.
All right. Okay. So I'd like your perspective on, you know, the Saints and how they manage the cap in terms of, you know, they're kind of the poster child for those people will say kicking the can, quote unquote, and, you know, converting money from a base salary into a bonus structure, moving it out over however many years they can, void years, all that stuff. And the interesting thing to me is, you know, they're not the only team that does it, but when it's going well, there's a lot nicer terms that are used for it. I saw somebody use the term financial alchemy to describe how the Eagles are operating and how it all worked out. Man, they got a Super Bowl. It's great. And no one's really thinking about, okay, 5 years from now, how is this going to look? Because they got it done. You know, the Saints, they didn't get it done. They got to the NFC Championship. There was the worst no-call in the history of sports, and they didn't get there, so we kind of view it as a failure. But, you know, it is kind of a, you know, when the Rams go all in and they win, we don't talk about, wow, was that worth it? Because of course it was worth it. And now, but the problem is it's hard to pull that back. It's hard to just pull the cord and start from scratch. And that's where the Saints are right now of like, man, you know, we didn't get that full reward. So now was it worth it at all? But either way, you got to figure out how to navigate around it. So I'm just curious where you land on that strategy as a whole, because it does help you compete. But then it can definitely lead to some problems down the line.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at it. And there's certainly more and more teams jumping on this bandwagon, and they have for the past couple of seasons, right? What the Buccaneers did during the Brady era was uberly aggressive in this regard. Void years, you know, massive bonuses, massive conversions, everything you're talking about here. So teams sort of pick and choose, I think, right now when they're going to do it. The Saints have just been one of those teams that have done it annually for over a decade now, and you're right. When you don't have that Super Bowl hanging over you, it continues to look like you're just beating the dead horse to a certain degree, right? And that's now amplified with the fact that there's many pieces on this roster that I think the team would like to move on from, and the aggressiveness of the cap gymnastics is disallowing them from being able to do that very easily, right? So that starts with the Carr situation, like we just talked about. You know, the Taysom Hill contract, the Kamara contract, the Cam Jordan contract, all of these players that are at least getting towards the end of their tenure here, maybe their careers as a whole, it's not just as easy as saying, let's just release these players. That's why teams don't do this on a regular basis, because they want the control to be able to say at any point in time, even the biggest players, even the highest cap hits on this roster have to be flexible enough for us to have a decision on every March. And the Saints don't have that ability right now. So I'm a proponent of being aggressive, especially when you know you have value somewhere on your roster, whether that's the quarterback position, whether that's with a couple of defensive rookies that you hit like the Rams are in currently right now. I'm a big proponent of that. I think the Saints have taken things a little bit too far when they've gone from 1 to 15 and 16 with their contracts being this aggressive with the cap situation, but they're going to have to go through 2 to 3 years of really serious purging now to get themselves back to square one, and then we'll see what they do with the next iteration.
Yeah, I think something I've said to Steve a few times is like, I think where you really suffer in that scenario is not necessarily the players you have around that you want. It's the players you have around that you'd like to move on from that you can't because it doesn't make sense to do so. And you end up keeping guys, like I look at a Michael Thomas, a guy they probably would have moved on from the Saints would probably a year before they did. And then you saw that really fall apart. But I do want to kind of sharp pivot here to something that's similar, but I'm sure you have feelings about as well. In baseball, there's no salary cap, so you can defer money, but it's a way different situation because it's all guaranteed, and you see these crazy deals coming in with, you know, like Shohei Ohtani with all that deferred money. It's insane, you know, and for a long time it was like, you know, we make jokes about like Bobby Bonilla Day, and like you're still paying this guy, he hasn't played in forever. It feels like to me, you know, we're setting up a scenario where 20 years from now is going to be Bobby Bonilla Day for like 50 different guys, and they're not playing anymore. They're still raking in cash. But does it even matter? Because we're just getting upset about a billionaire's balance sheet. You know, but to me, it just seems to be stacking the deck more and more and more in favor of the have it teams versus the don't have it teams in terms of the salary, or terms of deep yeah. pockets. So how do you view that situation? Because it just seems so bonkers to me that you can sign a guy. And even like Alex Bregman's deal this year, it has a bunch of backloaded money that, you know, he's probably not going to see until he retires. I'm just curious, what are your opinions on that iteration of current Major League Baseball contracts?
It's It's been around forever, right? I've been doing this for 20 plus years here, and the deferred money's been there, right? The Nationals have been big with it. The Angels, to some degree, have been doing this for quite a while. So it's been there, but it's been kind of buried under the woodworks, and the Dodgers just blew the doors off this thing with the Ohtani contract specifically and then everything that's followed. My take is this. The biggest issue I have with it isn't so much that it's a pay later structure and that, you know, Shohei Ohtani won't see $680 million until he's 40, 45 years old. To me, that's just accounting. The problem with it is that teams benefit from the present day value, right? So there isn't a salary cap, but there is a luxury tax. And if the Dodgers had the same rules as everybody else and the deferred contracts weren't on the books, their luxury tax bill would be upwards of $700, $800 million this season alone, just for this season, because of the bill that would be in place. But because Shohei Ohtani's $700 million is actually $460 million today, they get a $46 million tax salary instead of a $70 million tax salary. So there's a salary cap, there's a cap hit feel when you think about it from that regard, and they are getting significant benefits from doing things the way they're doing it. And they're doing it not only with Ohtani, they're doing it with Tommy Edman, right, and Teoscar Hernandez and players that, you know, should be simple 1-2 year contracts, but have become complicated and become massive benefits for the Dodgers. So I don't like that they get the win in that regard. I'm just not so much worried about the cash part of it.
Michael, just curious too, one last thing with Derek Carr. Do you think there's a scenario where the Saints just stand pat and write out the contract they have with him already?
Look, I sat here on my roster management tool for about an hour today trying to get ready for this thing. And the only way forward is if they can't actually trade him, if they have to keep him, the only way for them to get cap compliant by March 12th, in my opinion, is to actually process the full salary cap conversion on Derek Carr again. And I know that's just adding more of this to next year's conversation, but I don't see a way that they don't do that and don't do it with Taysom Hill and don't extend Cam Jordan out a year just to lower that cap hit. So I know that it's just burying the hole even further, but I have a feeling he's going to be on this roster and they're going to convert that salary just like they did last season.
Yeah, I think it would be something in the range of $30 million that they can restructure and move forward, and that definitely takes a huge chunk out of what they would need to do, and it has to be weighing on their minds at some level of like, there's a simple way we can do this and a really complicated way we can do this, and we'll see. I'm just curious, as you go around the NFL and you look at all these quarterback contracts, right? And last year was crazy, and it was just one up. It does feel like there is kind of a middle class of quarterbacking that's reemerging in kind of the Geno Smiths, the Derek Carrs, even the Daniel Jones contract, which, you know, seems way overvalued now. It was right there in the middle. I'm just curious, what do you see as kind of the future of quarterback contracts? Because it feels like if we continue at the rate that we're going,
you got to watch out. Wide receivers are catching up,
right? It just seems like how do you fill a roster out if you're paying a $30 million wide receiver, a $60 million quarterback? You know, can you have an offensive line? Can you have a running back? But where do you see that kind of market going?
Yeah, there's no question. We had a good little run there, right, with Baker Mayfield and Geno Smith and Daniel Jones, and it's an important offseason to make sure that conversation can continue, right? Because Brock Purdy should not be a $60 million quarterback. He should be in this conversation we're talking about. Sam Darnold, same thing. He should be in this same conversation. So as long as we have a pretty healthy middle class, I'm not overly concerned because, you know, at the same time in the next couple of weeks here, I think the Bills might give Josh Allen $65 million a year. So that's not going away because we're talking about $280, $300 million salary caps for the entire league here. So the league is keeping up. That is the position that will certainly continue to push as long as there are superstars. And I do think there's another crop here about to, you know, grow into it with the C.J. Strouds and maybe even the Jaden Daniels over the next couple of seasons. So I don't see it slowing down. Is it damaging to the rest of the rosters? Of course it is, right? We've seen this in basketball to a certain degree, and things have had to slide down a little bit. But as long as there's a healthy middle class and that becomes the dominating force and we have these outlier contracts at the top, I think we'll be just fine going forward.
Michael Jannetty, definitely appreciate the time, man. Thanks for making sense of all these crazy salary cap numbers with us. Appreciate you.
See ya.
Thanks so much, man.
Michael Jannetty, co-founder and editor at SpotTrack. You can check out all his work there. Great stuff if you want to dive deep into the numbers of salary capdom. And that's why I was like, I need him to come on and explain some of these things to me. Because you start reading it and it's like, I cannot comprehend.
No, it was funny because you booked it and I was just like, oh, that's great because I've been going to this guy's website for years. I'm glad to finally get the chance to talk to him because like anytime I have I get questions on Twitter all the time. Oh, what happens if they do this? That's where I go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, click, click, click. All right. I have an answer for you. It's a great website.
Our answer right now is taking a break. We'll be back with more Sports Talk. Stay tuned on WWL right after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Talking a little hockey right now, guys. Last night, unfortunately, Canada winning in overtime 3-2 over the U.S. ESPN had 9.3 million viewers for the Four Nations final. That makes it the most watched NHL game in 30-plus years.
Is it technically an NHL game?
Yeah, because it was their All-Star break. I don't think they can go back to the old format now anytime soon.
Yeah, I guess not. I didn't realize it would technically be an NHL game. More like an Olympics.
Yeah, it was like a mini Olympics for sure.
Yeah,
and I think that's what riled everybody up when you had the countries versus each other.
Well, it was a little more than just that. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely something. You know, I wasn't even really aware of it until it started. And then, you know, all the fights and everything, it was kind of fun. But, you know, definitely it got everyone talking about hockey. So if not, no one's talking about the NBA right now. Let's put it that way.
Going to take a break for the top of the hour news. Be back with more Sports Talk, so stay tuned right after this on this frigid Friday right here on WWL.